Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. Hello, John.
Hi, guys.
And as we tell you every day, by the way, you can text in any questions you've got for the professor. 710-710 is the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to any of your questions you've got for John before we let him go. But we had talked a bit about this as it pertains to the virus, John, and you know the potential of the season getting started with empty stadiums and the idea that you know you're going to hear things in a different way. You're going to hear the hits differently, all that stuff. And then I saw that DeSean Jackson, the Eagles wide receiver, said, you know, it's definitely going to be different. I think they should mic up the players. They should give fans the insight to see what really goes on between the white lines. I love it. I love that a player is saying, we've all said it and everybody outside of it has said it, but to hear a player say, yeah, mic the players up. Give the fans something unique. At least, you know, a silver lining to an otherwise really, really dark time. They can't go to games and tailgate and do the things they're used to. How does a fan not love that kind of access, maybe once-in-a-lifetime access?
Yeah, but the problem's going to be trying to edit it all out because, I mean, there's going to be so many swear words. You definitely have a problem as far as, you know, with the problem with the pandemic and all that stuff because now you're adding another element. Because, I mean, think about the idea that it's like, okay, so now they may be wearing masks. They now you have another mic in there. You got chips in the shoulder pads. And it's like, it's almost too much. And so it's a great idea. I think, you know, in some ways tells me that he was probably a fan of the XFL because there was such an openness there. But I think the, you know, the problem is going to be it's like, you know, you also have to have now two to three or four different people trying to edit out things and put it into the broadcast and make sure, you know, you don't have swear words on TV.
Well, maybe they'll do it like the Last Dance with Jordan, just in the beginning, give the little you know warning that
disclaimer
you're gonna hear adult language.
Yeah, but yeah. See, the difference with that is that you know that's on cable and you can be a little bit looser on those different things. You know, on network TV, yeah. You know, you got laws against that. I mean, you know, if we have swear words on this station, we have problems. So if we have swear words on TV, the networks have problems.
Hey, John, we maybe got to this last Friday, but I was wondering what you thought about Carlos Hyde and his salary, $2.75 million. Was that about in the neighborhood of what you thought it was going to
be? Yeah, I thought it was going to be maybe two or three, but I think this is a fair deal and a good deal. And remember, they did often offer DeMonta Freeman 1 year, $3 million. And so once he said no to that, then you come back and get him for a little bit cheaper. But again, to think about, you can get a 1,000-yard back. A back that you know was one of 16 that had 1,000 yards. Sure, he's a little bit older at 29 years old, but he's coming off now, which you could say was his best season, and he's had 900 yards plus in three of his last four. Now, again, there's incentives in the contract and everything else, and the idea is he's just a great insurance policy. So I think it was a very good signing.
Hey, John, we saw a little blurb over the weekend that Cam Newton is potentially open to being a backup, then he's open to hanging out and waiting to see, you know, what his opportunities are going to be. The idea that he's going to get a starting job anywhere seems completely unrealistic because I don't think there is one available unless you're going to tell me otherwise. So what do you expect to happen with him?
I get the feeling it's going to be more when that first quarterback injury happens, then you can call on him to try to be able to do something because, you know, he is obviously the best quarterback out there on the market. I mean, he's been a former MVP, should be healthy. By that time, he should be able to take a physical. But now the question is going to be, is there going to be any preseason games where quarterbacks can get hurt, or are there going to be any type of practices where the guys in training camp are going to get hurt? So I think he's wise and just waiting and waiting because certainly you'd like to be able to, you know, get some kind of a deal, but you really restrict yourself. Like, for example, you know, they took the deal in Tampa or in New Orleans, you know, for Jameis Winston, which, of course, that sets him up maybe for getting the quarterback job of the future if Drew Brees retires. But in this case, it's like being loose sometimes can work out.
Hey, John, Henry Ruggs, the fantastically athletic receiver out of Alabama, who was drafted by Oakland. Gosh, it sounds like he got his leg like pinned between a trailer and a car or something like that. How is he?
You hope he's going to be okay because, I mean, you're talking about somebody with 4.27/40, but wasn't that his father that was involved with that, or was it him?
No, I just said. No, his father shared the details.
Oh, okay.
And so, I guess he is, yeah, and so I guess he's on crutches right now. He says he's okay, but holy smokes.
No,
yeah,
this is
usually the time of year where we get, you know, these kinds of things happening with people, right?
Yeah, this is going to be really bad because, again, it's like, he's not obviously going to be able to train for a while, and you don't know how bad. And, of course, you don't know if he can even get to a team doctor. Well, he can't get to a team doctor because he can't go to Oakland. Oakland right now is in the process of moving out of Oakland and getting to Las Vegas. So, yeah, this one's pretty bad. And you figure that, this could jeopardize the early part of his season. And that's a big setback for the Raiders.
Hey, John, I think this is pretty cool what Kevin Stefanski is doing in Cleveland, the new Browns coach, as part of the All-In Challenge. He's going to let select fans help script the first 15 plays of one of the Browns preseason games. Here's what I'm wondering, John. How many do all the coaches script 15? Do they script 10? Do they script 20? And how often do they deviate from the script?
Yeah, I mean, it's one where pretty much most coaches go for the 15. And if not all coaches go for the 15. Because, again, I mean, you get into the game, you don't know exactly how it's going to go. Then you can make some variations and all that stuff. But, no, you script them because, you know, you spend the week studying the weaknesses of the defenses, you know, the weaknesses of the other team. And it's like, okay, so here's how the script goes. If this happens, then this goes. And so, yeah, and I think that's going to be kind of fun to see how he whittles that in there. But so far, compared to, you know, the previous coach, who was just an absolute disaster, I mean, Kevin Stefanski is getting a lot of good reviews. I mean, he's getting the fans involved. I mean, he's got Baker Mayfield being a little bit more quiet and concentrating on performance as opposed to just saying words and talking a good game and all that stuff. So, no, I think that he has a chance to do a pretty good job.
Again, any questions you've got for the professor, just text them into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to some of those as we speak with John every single day at this time. John, somebody from the 253 asking, will Patrick Mahomes revolutionize the way the NFL structures contracts? Everybody expects it to be $40 million plus, and depending on what Dak Prescott gets, maybe it goes even higher than that. What do you think is realistically in the cards for him when we're talking about the salary cap potentially coming down?
Yeah, I mean, so he's not going to revolutionize anything. Nobody revolutionizes anything. Can he take quarterback salaries to a new level? Absolutely. I mean, Russell Wilson was able to get it up to 35, and you figure Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes are going to be the ones that take it up even higher. But then here's where the stall is going to be, is that you don't know what the cap's going to be next year. Because, again, it very well could go down. And so revolutionizing the game, no. But I think at some point they've got to figure out a way to get him the best deal possible, because right now he's probably the best quarterback in the game, and he's doing it at such a young age.
Hey, John, where are you with K.J. Wright? The more I watch old games, you know, from last year, the more I think, man, that guy, he didn't get enough credit for having a really good year. I mean, three interceptions, which obviously a career high for him, but he just made a lot of plays. And I know he's been talked about as being possibly expendable. You know, maybe they make a cut there and free up some cash. But I don't know, man. I think he's got a pretty reasonable, based on how he played, I feel like he is not expendable for a pass rusher.
I agree, and I think you want to keep as much continuity as possible. But, boy, you look at the competition now for the outside linebacker spots, and you just kind of shake your head because you've got four guys competing for two starting jobs, and if they go more nickel, the strong side linebacker position is not going to be on the field much. But I think what may come down to this is that, KJ's getting a little bit older, but he still reminds me so much of Thomas Davis. Remember Thomas Davis, who had been in Carolina, you know, is now with the Washington Redskins, went down to Carolina. I mean, he's such a good guy as far as his play. And so, you know, last year he played with the Chargers. And one of his big things is it took him a long time to get recognized for how good he was and make the Pro Bowl. But he was without doubt one of the best coverage cornerbacks or linebackers in football. And you look at KJ Wright, and I see good coverage in him. And so maybe what it comes down to, because, you know, there's going to be a lot of rotation on the defensive line. Maybe there's going to be a lot of rotation on the linebacking core. Like, for example, you have Bruce Irvin out there as the possible starting strong safety, or, you know, and then you have Brooks battling on the other side with, trying to see if he can get the starting job. And so what I can see is that maybe what they do is that when they go nickel, then KJ comes in, if he's not starting, but if he comes in, and then it's going to be Wagner and Wright as the starters as far as on the nickel. And again, you know, nickel can be as much as 66% of the time. So I think that they have so many options, but I think the idea of not having KJ Wright, I don't care if he's making $7.25 million a year. You know, if Jadeveon Clowney comes back, he's probably going to be out of there. But if he doesn't come back, I think they need KJ Wright. They need him if they do get Clowney back. But I think that's one of the ways they can maybe shake it up a little bit, is when they go nickel, the two are Wagner and KJ Wright.
Hey, John, what leads you to believe, if you do feel this way, that the Seahawks run defense will be better this year?
Again, we still need to get that one thing figured out, as who's going to be that run-stopping backup defensive tackle. But I think what you can see is that they're faster. I think that makes it good. I mean, even with Cody Barton, and whether it's going to be Jordan Brooks getting in there, they got a little bit more power. They've got a little bit more fierceness in as far as what they can have. I think that the coverage units, and also remember, and I think that it was talked about over the weekend with Bobby Wagner, and he was saying that things are so much better with Quandre Diggs back there. And he's good against the run. He's good against the pass. I mean, he may not be Earl Thomas, but he reminds you of some of the things that Earl Thomas did. So I think that, Puna Ford's now going to be going into his third year. Jaron Reed's going to be there for the whole season. So I think they can be pretty decent against the run. And I think that L.J. Collier has a chance to really step up and do some good things.
You think they're done, John, in terms of addressing the defense? With maybe they add some depth, some minor, some veterans that are of the ilk we've seen in the past, not big names like Jason Jones and Tony McDaniel and Ataba Rubin and all those players. Mm-hmm. They've just really had a knack for finding those guys. Al Woods, obviously. Outside of a move like that, do you think they're done?
Pretty much. I mean, unless they want to bring in Everson Griffin, which, so far they haven't, and so far you figure out that they won't. I think they still leave the door open for Jadeveon Clowney, because if you get Clowney back, he really puts you over the top. But again, what's the chances of that right now? Figure 10%. So that doesn't look real encouraging. But I think, the only two moves that I think are going to be on the horizon is going to be a run-stopping defensive tackle and maybe Josh Gordon.
Hey, John, Peter King had a new ranking. Kansas City, of course, first, then Baltimore, New Orleans, San Francisco. Fifth, they have Tampa Bay, one slot ahead, or he does, ahead of the Seahawks. And Tampa, I mean, as we talked about last week, if Brady has his worst year, there will be 19 less turnovers, and I'm talking turnover-wise, 19 less turnovers than Jameis Winston had last year. But, man, jumping up to five, it seems like people are getting a little bit because, as you pointed out, their defense is – they've got some good pieces there, but – they have not been great on defense.
Yeah, but they were good stopping the run. That was their strength last year, because they were the best run-stopping unit in football. Where you worry about it is that, here's Tom Brady coming over, and there's no doubt by putting him and Gronk on the same team in Tampa, it legitimized them as a wild card. But still, you look at the division, they're not as good as New Orleans. New Orleans has more talent. And the thing that still scares me is that they've added the fewest number of players of any team in football, because all they basically did is bring in, and again, it's a great move because it makes a playoff team that hasn't been there in 9 years a playoff caliber wild card team. But you got Brady, you've got Gronk, you got two backup offensive linemen, one of them Josh Wells at the minimum, and then your seven draft choices, which the right tackle has to be able to start at right tackle, or they're in big trouble. So I don't know how that depth is going to be. Plus, in that front seven, there's a little bit of age, because you got a Ndamukong Suh. You got Jason Pierre-Paul. You know, Lavonte David's getting a little bit older, but still, I think that they can make a good run of it. And the defense really started to click as the season went on. Now it's a matter of seeing how good the offense is going to be. And I think the offense can be pretty good. I saw where Pro Football Focus, you know, pretty much wisely ranked them number one as far as their wide receiving group. Which, of course, that's pretty impressive because they get the best wide receiver duo in football with Chris Godwin and also Mike Evans.
John, apparently George Kittle's agent doesn't care about the tight end market. He said, I'm being paid to do a George Kittle deal. Do you think that indicates that he wants $12 to $14 million a year or more than that?
Well, if he wants $12 to $14 million, if I'm San Francisco, I'd jump at that. Because, you know, as long as he's not asking for 15 or 16, you know, the market right now just is starting to tip above $10 million a year for the tight ends. And clearly he's in the strongest position to be able to, you know, take it up a next level. But you don't want to get too greedy in this, you know, because, again, he's so good that you want to try to get ahead of the next wave of tight ends who are going to get money. So I think 12 to 14 is not a bad number for the 49ers. You know, if anything above that, then I think it's a little bit too unrealistic.
We had somebody text in last week. I want to get your thoughts. They were asking who you thought could be a cap casualty on this team if they decide to make a move, whether it's Clowney or anybody, Griffin, what have you. Would it be KJ? Would it be somebody else we haven't really discussed? How would you see them handling
that? Well, I mean, you have to start with the guys that are making $2.133 million, you know, the restricted guys. Like, for example, if they bring in another defensive lineman, particularly a defensive end, that could do something to, you know, Brandon Jackson. So that could make him vulnerable. I mean, and you look at the, you know, the possibility if they need to, you know, maybe there's trade value in Jacob Hollister, who's making $3.259. So there's about $10 million in, you know, restricted numbers and some of the escalators and some of the contracts that can be the first wave. And then, you know, if you need too much more, which I can't see them needing too much more, then you have to go to KJ and Bradley McDougal. So that's the possibility. But, you know, they don't have to sort that out until sometime in late August.
Hey, John, we talked to Ron Francis, non-football question here. Just such a nice guy. And when hockey comes here, first of all, what do you think? What's your favorite nickname for the team and the mascot? And then also, are you going to become a puckhead? With a P, by the way.
Yeah, see, the problem I face is being it's like my big thing is I love hockey. I mean, this is one of the last years I can now, you know, not root for a team, because I could at least root for the Penguins because there's no team in town. But once the hockey team starts here in Seattle, then I have to stay neutral as a reporter. And so, you know, I can't root or do anything like that. I like Sockeyes, but it sure sounds like it's not going to be Sockeyes. Sounds like it's going to be the Crackers or whatever they call them, the Krakens. Crackers.
The Crackers.
John, you don't like the Kraken?
No. No, because, you know, it just sounds like something if you're down in Miami Beach and you run into a group that's trying to give you some crack cocaine. It's just there's something that doesn't ring my bell on that one.
Okay. All right, John, I'll move on then. I won't. I like the idea of Seattle having a team name that no one else has.
Well, who else has Sockeyes? See, the reason I like Sockeyes because, you know, what's the feeling you get? All right, it's salmon, but also what it comes down to is like you sock them in the eye. I mean, you just be physical about it because this is hockey. You know, kill, kill, kill. This is hockey. I mean, that's where you can see on Slapshot. That was the big line on that one. I just like Sockeyes because it just sounds physical.
I'm going to go somewhere and talk about something I'm not too familiar with. But as far as I know, when it comes to salmon, mm-hmm. the sockeye isn't really that tough of a fish, John. I mean, there's the king salmon or the Chinook. The silvers would be cool, silver salmon or coho. But the sockeye I always just kind of look at like, eh, they don't really strike fear into anybody's heart. I don't think they give you as much fight as those other fish.
No,
either.
But you don't care about
steelhead.
The fight.
Yeah, okay, but they give you a good fight, but sockeye not so much.
Yeah, but what gives? Here's the big question right now, and is it slipping through everybody's mind? Because it slipped through mine too. I just thought about it. Where's our Copper River sockeye salmon?
I don't think those are sockeye salmon, Copper River salmon, John.
No, I get it. I mean, I get it at certain restaurants, and I get it at Sockeye. But it's like, what happened? Do we have no season like that because of the pandemic? For Copper River?
I don't know. Somebody could text that in, I'm sure.
Because again, it's like this would be the time that we would be eating, you know, Copper River salmon, and nobody's even brought it up.
Yeah, that's a big story that's going underserved, certainly.
Yeah, John, we have riots in the streets. We got a pandemic that's got the world in trouble, and it's like, now we don't
but
even know.
But nobody's talking about the salmon.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, where do we have them?
Yeah. I can't believe the priorities of the media in this country. How are they not making this a bigger deal, John? It's craziness. All right, John, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. Well, there's a national football writer out there that thinks it's Super Bowl or bust for the Seahawks this season. You agree with that? We'll talk about that next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at the top of the hour, our buddy Michael Bumpus will join us on the program. And by the way, he'll be filling in the rest of the week. Jim Moore will be on vacation starting tomorrow. So Bump will sit in that seat for the rest of the week. We'll talk to him coming up at 5 o'clock. Also, J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith caught somebody vandalizing his car. And, well, we'll let you hear the audio of that coming up in less than 15 minutes. But Adam Rank, who writes for NFL.com, says it's Super Bowl or bust for the Seahawks this year. He wrote a piece for it. You guys can go to NFL.com and check it out. Super Bowl or bust. Now, every team's goal, and Dave, you've repeated this more than a few times the year. You guys went 2-14. You thought you were going to the playoffs. You thought you were a Super Bowl team that year. So every
oh, I said
team
that?
Thinks, yeah, time or two. Yeah. but that's
what
true of
idiot.
Every team, right? I don't know how many teams actually go into the season going, man, we got no shot. I hope we survive. I hope I can get through uninjured or whatever. There might be individuals that feel that way. But when you look at a team like the Seahawks, and he gives a few different reasons, and he points to Russell Wilson and different things like that. But do you feel like if they don't get there, because that implies, all right, let's say they get to the NFC title game and they lose. Is that a disappointing? It's disappointing, yeah, that they lost. But do you look at that as an underachievement? Or, yeah, they should have been better. They should have been a Super Bowl winner.
Well, I think there was a pretty good chance that if they had, and I said this many times, Bob, if they had Chris Carson, I think they go to the NFC Championship game. And they have a great chance of beating San Francisco. They're only 1 yard away from getting it done during the regular season. So, and twice. So I don't know. I just think it's an overreaction. So I'm looking at Adam Rank, and he tweeted, this was April 14th, Russell Wilson is so underappreciated. Like, okay, well, first of all, welcome to our world. But then Now all of a sudden you're seeing all these people say that, oh, they're wasting him. You know, the window for Russell Wilson to me is still wide open for at least another 5 years. I mean, the guy has played 8 seasons. He has not missed a game. So, and he's just getting better. And we talked to Jake Heaps on Friday about how, you know, he's an evolving quarterback, and he absolutely is. It's the same thing for every quarterback. I mean, you just get smarter and smarter. Well, some guys don't. But, for the most part, if you're a good player like Russ, you're going to get better and more knowledge. And, you know, Jake was talking about wanting the offense to kind of flow through him. I mean, he's gotten to that point where he's like, you know, a Peyton Manning type of player. So, yeah, but I just think that there's an overreaction as far as the window, because, you know, and again, it goes back to the last few drafts that, you know, these guys, the building the bottom end of their roster and building some of these good defenders has to come out of these last 3 drafts. And, you know, and I think just because people can't see that, they see Bobby's getting older, KJ's getting older, you know, Russ, we worry about Dwayne Brown, you know, but to me, you know, if they continue to do the things that they've done, and that's John finding the right guys and Pete coaching them up, I don't see that there's this big panic all of a sudden for the window closing here in Seattle.
Well, I think it's cool that Adam Rank projects the Seahawks as going to the Super Bowl or bust, or however he wrote his story. And he also projects Russell Wilson as the MVP this year. So you like seeing all of that. But if you're looking at the team objectively, do you really feel like they're Super Bowl caliber? On the one hand, you go, okay, Russell Wilson every year, as long as they got a future Hall of Famer as a quarterback, and you know that you're going to be in the mix anyway, but it just seems to me right now that they're in that lower part of the mix, that wild card mix, more so than that Super Bowl contending mix. And I just say that because of the division they're in has gotten tougher. You look at the rest of the competition in the NFC, Tampa Bay is a new one this year with Tom Brady, or at least a lot of people think they're going to be anyway. I'm not necessarily in that crowd. New Orleans, Green Bay, and Minnesota every year. Philadelphia and Dallas you're dealing with. And I can go real quickly over reasons why they could get to the Super Bowl. You look at Russell Wilson, their wide receivers, their running backs, the tight end group with Olsen and Disley coming back, the linebacker group, you love them, the cornerbacks with Dunbar if he plays, you like him with Griffin, and the strong safeties you feel good about too. But how long have people always told us, boy, you win games at the line of scrimmage? Well, those are their two biggest weaknesses in my book anyway, the offensive line and the defensive line. So does that look like a Super Bowl caliber team to you? It doesn't necessarily to me. It's another good team, but I don't know if they're Super Bowl good.
Well, and in your opinion, it'll be because the lines are weak?
Well, yeah, the lines are the weakest part of the team, don't you think?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement, because you feel good about their secondary now with Witten, and hopefully Dunbar will be able to play. We'll see how that plays out. A full season of Quandre Diggs. You look at the running back room, seems to be pretty steady with the addition of Hyde, and hopefully Carson's healthy. You like your wide receivers even better if they can bring back Josh Gordon. Your tight ends, hopefully Disley will be healthy, and that's somebody he pointed to, Dave. I assume if you read the piece, you liked the fact that he pointed to Disley as a breakout star in 2020. And he loves Russell. He said Russell's like, he compared him to pepperoni pizza, saying it's underrated and you just assume it's always going to be there. But he loves Russell. He loves Pete Carroll. And he says the competitive urgency index is elevated. Seattle was good last year. That's the truth. But the Seahawks haven't moved past the divisional round once over the past five seasons. And you can say it was a gutty performance to go on the road and win in Philadelphia against an equally injury-ravaged Eagles squad. But when you have one of the best coaches and one of the best quarterbacks, expectations are high. And that's what I would point to, Jim, is they've had bad lines in the past. The defense was certainly better. But Russell's played behind a lot of average to below average offensive lines and really excelled. So I don't put as much on the O-line as I otherwise would, because he's just proven he can deal with what's in front of him. My concern still is on the defensive line.
Yeah, well, I think you guys both make a good point. And Jim, you know, you're right. You win at the line of scrimmage. So there's a lot of question marks on that. I'm much more not concerned, but I guess, you know, my level of concern is a little bit higher in offensive line than it is D-line, just because, again, I think Jaron Reed has a chance to bounce back. I think Green and Collier are going to be better. I love Bruce Irvin. But, you know, on the offensive line, it's not so much about the talent and everything. It's just about playing together. The one thing I'll say, though, is I do think they might have the best position coach there in Mike Solari. I think I really respect him, and not just me. I know that a lot of people like Howard Mudd around the league, I had a long talk with him about he really likes Solari and the way he communicates and everything. And so, but yeah, those two are question marks. But they're, again, it's like you said, Bob, I agree with that. You know, he's been able – Russ is going to get sacked, right? I mean, he's what, 5 of his 8 years, I think he's been in the top 10 as far as most sacked quarterbacks. But he's going to try to make things happen, and he's been able to work around that. So the big thing to me – and you're right, this guy, he talks a lot about – Rank does about Will Disley. And that's one of the things I think about –
this guy could be the number two receiver. I mean, that's how good he is. I mean, I feel like he is in the same boat as Kittle, but he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And he also writes in here, I guess Disley, according to Pete Carroll, he's been killing it in rehab. And so, you know, hopefully he's going to be back for a whole season. So, yeah, they still have the, I think, good personnel. And then, you know, at least two guys you trust on the offensive line, Yapati and Dwayne Brown, and then we'll see what happens with the rest of them.
All right, a couple of reminders. You do have radios in your homes. If you've got a smart speaker, Google, Alexa, whatever you've got, just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and boom, you got a radio right there. We also have another edition of Mariners Classic tonight at 7 p.m. It's Ichiro's Star Wars Throw in 2001. You don't want to miss one of the great calls of all time from Dave Niehaus. That's brought to you by Roofers and Waterproofers Local 54. DeSean Jackson has a great idea. We'll let you hear more about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
My feeling about playing the empty stadium, I mean, I definitely can't recall playing in the empty stadium. I never really played in the empty stadium, honestly. I've always had fans, even from Pop Warner. Like, I used to look in the stands to have fans. So, I mean, like, it's going to definitely be a culture shock. I think it's going to be very more.
Unless they start micing up everybody.
Yeah, it's going to get crazy. I mean, I think they should, though, bro. They should give the fans, like, the insight to really see what goes on in between the white lines, bro. It gets crazy, bro. It definitely does. I know in the trenches it get crazy, and I know out there on the outside it gets crazy too. The conversations be going back and forth on.
That's DeSean Jackson. We brought this up with the professor John Clayton, and DeSean Jackson saying, "Yeah, mic the players up. It's going to be an empty stadium. Let the fans hear what's really going on out there." And obviously there'd be cursing, and I know the delay'd be hard because there'd be a lot of cursing, but. Do like Dave said, just put up the disclaimer. We, you know, we can power through it, or you can watch it with the volume off if you want. But I just think it'd be a very cool look at the inside, what's really being. We see players yelling at each other on the field or yelling out signals or whatever, but we don't hear what they're saying because of the crowd noise. I think it could be incredibly unique. Put the disclaimer out there and let everybody choose whether they want to expose themselves to such ugly language or not.
Yeah, well, like Clayton said, you know, the FCC and it's cable's one thing, and you know, with the networks, it's another.
ESPN games then.
Yeah, exactly. But the closest I came to anything like that was my last year in the league in '95. We played in the Astrodome against the Houston Oilers. And it was so empty, and it was a meaningless game at the end of the season. I think it was our second-to-last game. And it was odd, man. I mean, you could hear everything out on the field. I remember coming off the field and screaming out a swear word because I was mad at something, and one of my teammates goes, "Oh, wow, that's the first time I've ever seen you do something like that." Like, I kind of yelled at the team or something like that. But, yeah, you could hear it, man. You could hear everything, and it's going to be even worse or – you know, more different with nobody in the stands.
Well, it sure seems like a time that they should experiment. You know, golf is talking about it too, in light of the Champions for Charity match, and everybody seemed to love that. So, yeah, why not? I know the answer to that is, you know, the swearing, but still, I would take a flyer, take a gamble, have a wild hair, and let's go. You know, the referee, I would tell him to keep his mic open more often than just when he's making the calls. When someone comes up to complain to him, I'd like to see that. I'd like to see the quarterback, the coaches mic'd up. You don't have to be listening in on what the play call is, but maybe when he was talking to different players or a different coach, like with Schottenheimer and Carroll, all those different things. I think they should just hang it out on the edge and see how it goes. And the things that work out well, bring them back when the fans are there, too.
I just want y'all to know right now, before y'all see this somewhere else, one of these little motherfucking white boys didn't know where he was going and broke my fucking window in my truck. Broke my shit. This wasn't no this is a residential area. This wasn't no stores overhead, no none of that. broke my window. I chased him down and whooped his ass. So if the footage come out and y'all see it, I chased him down and whooped his, broke my window. This ain't no hate crime. I ain't got no problem with no with nobody. Ain't got no problem with me. It's a problem with the motherfucking system. That's it. The motherfucker broke my window and I whooped his ass. He didn't know who window he broke. And he got his ass whooped. Just so y'all see it later, I'm telling y'all now.
That's the voice of NBA player J.R. Smith, and there's a video of him. Apparently, he took his truck and parked it on a residential street in L.A. so that it wouldn't be part of, you know, what was happening with the riots. But somebody found their way to his truck and smashed his window in, and he caught him. And it's on video. He threw a beating on the guy, and I don't blame him. I mean, you get somebody that's coming up to your house, your car, that's way off the beaten path from everything that's going on, just to be a little piece of trash and just to vandalize, not making any kind of statement, not in you know, in honor of any memory of anybody. Just let me be a creep, let me destroy. And he caught him, and I don't feel bad for the guy at all.
Yeah, well, he got what he deserved. No question about that.
And yes, he did.
That guy picked the wrong truck to mess with. But I like the way he comes out, you know, and says, "Hey, just so everybody knows, I'm putting it out there, just so it doesn't get twisted." And kind of got ahead of it. It's pretty funny.
Dave, you know, I was just sitting here thinking that it reminded me of story time with Dave Wyman. You probably appreciated that story, didn't you?
Yes, I did, very much so, yes.
Why, did Dave have a similar story about somebody messing with his property?
Well, yeah, someone stole a woman's purse, and Dave went after him, I think, in Denver, and then there was that story about the guy over by the pinball machine. I mean, there was a fight involved anyway, where Dave whooped someone's butt.
As he limped over to beat him.
It's like, remember in True Lies where she goes, "Did you ever kill anybody?" And he goes, "Yes, but they were all bad."
Oh, man. How often do you expect to catch the person in the act, though? I mean, usually, unfortunately, people walk up to their car and they see their window's been smashed or it's been vandalized or robbed, whatever. It seems a rarity. You actually happen upon the perpetrator. I mean, that's... I'll be honest, I daydream about some of those moments. Walking up and seeing somebody messing with my car, just like, oh boy, Christmas come early.
You got a freebie.
Well, yeah. It happened to me once, Buca di Beppo, you know that Italian joint there? My daughter's 16th birthday. And I wasn't unhappy when I got out to my truck and saw that the window had been bashed in and the guy stole my laptop because he was a nice crook because he left my dog. He left Willie in there and didn't bother him.
Oh. You're a nicer person than me, Jim.
He's been talking a lot to his agent, Jack Bechta, over the past few months, and he has consistently said, "I don't care about the tight end market. I'm being paid to do a George Kittle deal." And I tend to agree with him here. He is their number one target, so important in that locker room, and clearly that he is doing something that transcends what a typical tight end does. Jimmy Graham got a four-year, $40 million deal in 2014 that reset the tight end market. It really hasn't moved in the past 6 years.
And we touched on this earlier, George Kittle looking for a deal outside of the scope of tight ends, and I would say he deserves it. He's 26 years old. He's coming into the final year of his rookie deal. I mean, he's an everything guy, a great blocker, a great receiver, an incredible athlete. I think your debate as to who's the best tight end in the league would be him and Travis Kelce, right? Kelce's a few years older, but incredibly productive as well. So we'll see what they do. Maybe this bodes well if Disley gets healthy and he can put a couple of good seasons together. Maybe he's going to thank George Kittle and his agent.
Yeah, you know, it's funny right now. There's some really good tight ends in the league. And, you know, you got O.J. Howard down in Tampa who's going to be catching passes from Brady. And then Mark Andrews, a couple of the good Hurst, the kid in those two guys are in Baltimore. And I think Will Disley, too. So hopefully he sets the market for Will by the time he gets to his, you know, big deal here. But, yeah, I agree with you, Bob. The thing that stood out to me, like that run he has against New Orleans, you know, where he's getting face mask and everything, that
all that stuff is great, but when I watched the film before we went down and played him on Monday Night Football, I watched him knock Luke Kuechly right on his butt. And it was just a face-up, just got down the middle of him and just drove him right to the ground. It was like, I kind of looked at it like, oh, man, there's a fellow linebacker just getting killed. But, yeah, he's just an all-around great player.
All right. I was waiting for Jim, but I guess we'll hit the break. We've got our guest coming up next. The man who will be occupying Jim's spot for the rest of the week as Jim goes on vacation. Our buddy Michael Bumpus will join us next here with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.